Hello, everybody, and welcome to Honey Badger Radio. My name is Brian Martinez, and we are here with Fireside Chat number 83, talking to John Davis. John Davis is a retired public official and international lawyer, writes on current gender issues. From Cleveland, Ohio, he was educated at Case Western Reserve University, one of the top 10 universities in the United States, by the way, Seattle University School of Law, and New York University School of Law. One of the top 10 law schools in the United States. John is fluent in seven languages, including ancient Latin and Greek. He has traveled the world over many times and has represented clients in his 35-year career, such as United States government and the Federation of Russia. He has been a prosecutor three times in his 35-year career. He has held positions such as Assistant Attorney General, United States Speaker, and Assistant District Attorney. Chief Wing JAG, I don't know what JAG stands for, but U.S. Air Force Auxiliary and Supreme Court Law Clerk. For most of his career in civil law, John was a successful international lawyer practicing in many nations around the world. Thank you, John, for joining us on the show.
Brian, thank you. It's a real honor to be here. I really admire the work that you and the Honey Badgers are doing, and I hope you'll continue, and I'm really glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, this is really exciting. Just a little bit of backstory as to how I came across your work. Normally, we have these weekly news shows, and we have these weekly news shows, and I have an after show for the clients where I go through an article with our patrons. And this one week, I found your article about the Parkland shooter and bullying. And I thought, well, let's read this one. I didn't even read it yet. I just picked it based on the title. And I said, let's go through the patrons. You know, we'll read through this. And as I read through it, I was like, wow, this is really good. Like, I thought it was just a really good perspective. And it kind of like it confirmed my suspicions about bullying, which we'll get into in the show. So one of the patrons said, have you tried reaching to this guy? Because it would be really interesting to have him on. And I said, yeah, I'm definitely going to try. And sure enough, I thought it would be an impossible task, but I was able to find you pretty easily and you responded and you knew who we were. And it was like, wow, this is Providence.
Well, actually, I worked with the Honey Badgers years ago when Crystal Garcia was still with the Honey Badgers. She asked me to draft a petition that she could take to the United Nations for formation of a men's council in the United Nations, as there is a women's council. Mm-hmm. And I drew up a long list of men's issues. It was two or three pages long. And I think she got 10,000, 15,000 signatures on it, took it down there, but nothing ever happened, which was common in those days. Now we're starting to get some traction in the men's rights movement, and maybe we should try it again. So I have known the Honey Badgers really that long, although, you know, I have so many other things to do, as do many of us in the movement. I haven't had much to do with them recently, but this is a real pleasure to be on this program. So
yeah, no, it's a real pleasure to have you. I have a particular interest in what professionals, you know, whether they're in law or psychology or whatever, would have to say on men's issues, because I want to make sure that, at least for my part, we try to stay as objective and as possible. You know, I don't want to become ideological like feminism. So not that I think that it's would even pick up any traction because men's issues, whatever. But anyway, so before we get into the actual discussion, there's a couple things I need to address to the audience. One, guys, if you're having any issues watching us on the live show on YouTube, remember that we have a Twitch stream, and the Twitch streams tend to be a lot more stable and there's a lot less lag. I don't know why this is. It just seems to be an issue with YouTube. And sometimes Facebook is also good. In addition, there was a super chat that was left on the show that I didn't read off because it was on a show that did not happen. That was the last week's show where Aiden kind of canceled on me at the last minute. So Derek Burge sent us €2 and said, women offering free sex must be misogyny somehow. That sort of related to our last show that we never did about the hookup culture. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to make that up at some point, but I'm waiting to hear back from Aiden Paladin on that. So one other thing is we should probably clarify what some of these sort of, I guess they're suffixes that are added to John Davis's name. So I looked into them a little bit because I thought people might want to know. I would consider myself to be a layman on all this stuff, and I bet that a lot of people in our audience are the same way. So JD stands for Juris Doctor Degree. The JD degree is usually required to practice law in the U.S. It is considered the first degree in law. And the LLM is the Master of Laws degrees. The LLM degree is an advanced law certification that has global credibility. Is that about right?
That's you couldn't have described it any better than that, Brian.
And the BA, I guess, is that just bachelor's or is that something else? That was the one.
That's just a bachelor. But if you're putting your academic credentials in Europe mostly, then you list all of the degrees from beginning to end. It's a bachelor's in psychology that I got.
All right. Oh, awesome. Bachelor's in psychology. Well, that's cool. All right. Mm-hmm. So. All right, so let's go ahead and get into the discussion. So I want to know what was it that got you interested in doing work with the men's rights movement? Why did you decide this was important stuff?
Well, before I got involved in the men's rights movement, I first of all thought I was just a voice in the wilderness all alone. And I had to wait till I retired. I found that if you tried to raise men's issues in our current institutional environment, you're going to be isolated, ostracized, and they'll try to stomp on you. And I started very early, as soon as I got out of law school, and realized, you know, you simply couldn't do it in the climate of gynocentrism and misandry that has been in existence in our culture from easily the 1970s. So I held off doing anything really active. I tried my best to bring fairness to gender issues that came up in my career, but I really had to be subtle and work behind the scenes. Then I retired about 2 or 3 years ago. Well, 4 years ago. And I wrote books, and people said, well, you should get on Facebook. And so I did. And just one day put in men's rights in those Facebook search category and found A Voice for Men and the Honey Badgers and proceeded to get involved on Facebook, meeting people and discussing issues. It was really, really helpful. John Gormley became an early ally. He was in Ireland working with the men's rights movement there. And John and I worked together early on. And I mentioned Crystal Garcia with the Honey Badgers. I had some correspondence with Dean Esme and with Paul and Mike Buchanan. And then I proceeded to write about 6 books involving men's rights issues. And I focused very early on sexual crimes. And there was an important reason for that. I'm not obsessed with it, but it's very important, I think, that the men's rights movement remove women from their moral pedestal, or I shouldn't say women, I should say feminists, from their moral pedestal. When feminism started 50 or 60 years ago, and I was there when it started, they immediately seized on medieval superstitions and myths about all men being rapists and all rapists being men, meaning that sexual crimes and misconduct were characteristic of men, but not women.
Right.
And what we found from modern science and research, which is completely absent from most of our mainstream media and institutions, is that women, by our standards, commit as many sexual misconduct events as men do.
Sure.
But we're blind to that because whenever we see a predator on a television show or a movie or a commercial, we see a man being portrayed instead of equally men and women. For instance, there was recently a video on Facebook about five women reading the accounts of children who had grown up and who had been molested as children, and they were very surprised when they met the actual victim because they were men.
Mm-hmm.
But the program bent over backwards to make it look like these men who had grown up as victims of child molesting had only been molested by men. And in fact, we know that women commit by far the majority of child molesting in the United States. That was unheard of. In the 1950s, literally, professionals believed that only one in a million events of child molesting were conducted by women. And so we need to change those kinds of stereotypes and superstitions, because that constant shaming of men for their sexuality is relentless in our culture. And it's one of the things that's driving male suicide. It's one of the things that's driving inequality in our institutions with regard to men and women. So I decided to attack that first, because I had prosecuted sexual assault cases and listened to endless days of testimony by experts. And I think we really need to open our eyes culturally. So that's why I wrote books on such as Female Sex Predators, A Crime Epidemic, to try to expose what the real situation is regarding sexual misconduct in our culture. So it isn't always something that's used to shame men. And I think not that we need to go out and shame women, but I think we need to adjust our understanding that it's not something that's particular to men, and it's not a good reason to hate men, which is what feminism promotes.
Hmm. Yeah, that's all very fantastic. And I did link the books that you've written to your Amazon in the low bar. So if people want to look at the stuff that you've done, as well as I link to your blog, which we're definitely going to talk about coming up here. So you're retired from legal practice and all that completely, or?
Pretty much. I still do a little consulting here and there, but I'm enjoying relaxing a little bit, and frankly getting into the men's rights movement. That's mm-hmm. my passion right now.
Wow. What does it say that you had to basically hide your perception of reality from your business so that you could actually have a job? What does that say? Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. It's something that feminism nurtured in the media. If you opposed feminism, you were immediately labeled and shamed as a misogynist. Mm-hmm. And that still goes on very largely. People say, well, you just hate women. You know, no, don't hate women. Love women. But the majority of women aren't the one who are causing the problem. It's the small minority, or 18%, who are feminists who hate men. You know, mm-hmm. that are causing the problem. And that's what we're focusing our criticisms and our efforts on, not women in general. I think the majority of women actually do support men's rights. And actually, some of the best supporters I've had have been women.
Mm-hmm.
Not feminists, though.
Yeah. So, what about, I want to throw this in there, and I know this is a little, a bit of a tangent, but while it's true that very few women identify, or people in general, identify with the label of feminist, how many people believe a lot of the feminist myths where men have always ruled and, men are the majority of rapists and men are the majority of wife beaters, or, domestic violence is just another way of saying wife beater or whatever. I wonder how popular those notions are even amongst people who don't say that they're feminist. They essentially believe in the principal sort of core pillars of feminism. Because I think that's the thing that keeps that ideology alive, is not necessarily whether or not people call themselves feminists, but that they believe in some of the feminist ideas, or they believe that feminism was once, you know, a good idea, either in this other time period or even today in another part of the world, say like the Middle East, for example.
Feminism really has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. If we look back historically, I think it's Peter Wright who expounds on gynocentrism originating in the 12th century. And he's right. In Western culture, the Catholic Church and the aristocrats in Europe united and found that you could easily get men to go out and go to war if you can convince them that they're worthless if they're not slaughtering other people on the battlefield for the defense of their women. So misogyny, the shame of misogyny was interjected into our culture around the 12th century, the time of Eleanor of Aquitaine. And she set up a court of love, literally. That was the name of the Cour d'Amour in France, where she and 60 other women decided what was appropriate for men when they were interacting with women. And then that was spread through troubadours and plays and music of the time, much like Beyonce and Rihanna, you know, spread ideas using mm-hmm. their entertainment, you know. And it became a backbone of European culture. If we jump ahead a few hundred years, in Germany, for instance, there's a book called Frauendienst, which was written by a German aristocrat, and it was how he basically came into the service of women. Frauendienst in German means in the service of women, how he was taught early at the age of 14 how to service women sexually and otherwise. So it's European gynocentrism that really formed the basis for modern-day feminism. First-wave feminism in both England and in the United States very much not just imitated, but was part of the Ku Klux Klan. Oh, yeah. At one time, you know, one time we had 5 or 6 million people in the Klan in the United States. And if you look at the actual Klan instead of the Hollywood misconceptions about it, the Klan was based on gynocentrism. The Klan was formed for white women, being superior to minorities such as Hispanic Catholics or blacks. And it was to elevate Protestant women to a very high pedestal. And Klan died out in the 1940s when the IRS finally put an end to the organization, but it resurfaced again in the 1960s as for second wave feminism. The idea was, well, women are superior to men and deserve extra protections, and they've been oppressed by men, and we all know the mantras that come after that. So that's really kind of feminism has been tied to violence and racism and misandry for its entire history.
Mm-hmm. And today, there's Antifa, which is also centered on gynocentrism. And you're aware of Antifa and like by any means necessary in those groups. Yeah. They're all run by women. I mean, they basically, Black Lives Matter is run by women.
Absolutely. They are Marxist groups. If anyone in our audience follows Jordan Peterson, he has some brilliant insights on how the neo-feminists and Antifa and BLM are all part of Marxist movements to basically destroy Western civilization, the order that allowed Western civilization to flourish. Is very much under attack by these Marxist groups. Mm-hmm. Their goal is Marxism, because groups like Antifa, BLM, feminist groups, now, National Organization of Women, they all see the government as, well, okay, if we can make the government omnipotent and individuals powerless, we can easily manipulate the government. we know how to manipulate the government. We get a hold of the media, we use shaming techniques, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what their objective is to put the government in control of everything and then get control of the government. But that's been going on since, you know, for 5,000 years, you know, recorded history. You know.
For sure, for sure. And one of the ways they do it is actually by attacking masculinity itself, because you pointed out Jordan Peterson, when I say masculinity, I'm not just talking about men, because there is a masculinity in women as well. By destroying masculinity, they destroy individuality, the individualism that prevents, that essentially would normally push back on this sort of collectivist, communist way of thinking.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why boys are doing so poorly in our academic system, why boys are committing suicide at 6 times the rate of girls, okay, and many, many other factors, why men have such a shorter lifespan than women. It's because our institutions, since feminism took over, have been designed to be Marxist institutions where everybody is the same and everybody receives the same low level of sustenance in the culture. There's no room for individual achievement or individual courage or any of the other virtues that we associate with humanity. If you think of how the ancient Greeks, look at some of the ancient Greek statues and how they portrayed men. Mm-hmm. They were boldly striding forward, muscled, demeanors of confidence and self-actualization on their faces. And if you look at the common man today depicted in the media, he's an idiot, you know, if we go by commercials or any, most of the roles they get, they're effeminate idiots who are basically defective women. Okay. So if we compare those, that's one of the reasons why men are in such difficulty in our institutions, because they're expected to act like women who have different characteristics than men, biologically, physiologically, neurologically, and in many other respects.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Toxic masculinity is a myth created by feminism to shame men.
Absolutely.
Okay, so,
and it's not working very well. I don't know if you know this, but they've rebranded toxic masculinity, or they're starting to. They're calling it restrictive masculinity instead. There's a rebranding that just started happening. University in Texas called it a restrictive masculinity. So you're probably going to start seeing this more in feminist propaganda. They're going to stop using toxic masculinity and they're going to start saying restrictive masculinity, because you see, men are restricted to certain types of masculinely, you know, acceptable behavior. And that's why they have to rename it, because the word toxic doesn't work with a lot of people. So
I hadn't heard that. So the other term I heard was hegemonic masculinity.
Hegemonic masculinity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got a super chat here I'm going to read out, and then we're going to get into your blog. Red Moon Blade gave us $2 and says, I can't trust women. I think that's completely viable. You know, that this is just the way things are right now. I could see how it's difficult, but as long as you, you know, keep your mind open, maybe you'll, there are other, the honey badgers aren't the only, nayfaults all there out there. So, or nay-waltz. I would say not all females, not all feminists. Okay. So tell me some of the things that you like to blog about. And why?
Let's take that super chat for a second.
Oh, sure.
That's
sure.
Really, you know, I, again, a lot of people think that MRAs, you know, men's rights advocates, are against women, and we're not. It is very difficult to trust women today, and you should not trust all women all the time. That's not healthy for anybody, whether you're trusting any kind of people, whether they're men or women or superiors or people in authority. You have to mediate and adjust your trust. And yes, some women can be trusted, and you have to look at the circumstances can she be trusted in this circumstance? You don't have to distrust all women all the time, but you have to be careful when you extend your trust. Interpersonal relationships, for instance, are very much about trusting a woman with your feelings as a man. Okay. Well, you might want to spend some time seeing whether this woman can be trusted with your feelings before you entrust them with your feelings, sexual or otherwise. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of women who go around complaining about men and they think all men are rapists. Well, that's probably not someone you want to trust with your feelings. So it's healthy not to trust women or men or anyone else until you have a good basis for deciding whether you should trust them or not. And it's not so much women in our culture that have earned distrust as our institutions.
Absolutely.
Let's take divorce, for example. Well, you can have a good marriage, but if she decides to get divorced, a judge who doesn't like men or who is gynocentric or who worships his daughters, they're the worst, will come in and clean you out. And he could care less whether you're out on the street in the gutter. Okay, it's all for women in their minds. And the male judges with daughters are the worst. That's actually been documented. It's called the chivalry hypothesis, mm-hmm. where judges say, well, I'm going to put this guy out on the street. This poor little gal gave him the best of her years, and she deserves everything he's got. So it's not so much women that you need to completely distrust as the institutions that are going to back them up and ruin your life because they're gynocentric, and our institutions hate men in large measures.
Absolutely. It's definitely the system that's the problem. Even if the woman is completely honest and angelic, if a man is afraid that he could be falsely accused of something by her, I think that the fear that can happen is real because the system supports it. It's not that there's a woman in the room. It's that there's a loaded gun in the room that only the woman can access, and you have to trust her with it, essentially. The gun being the state. And it will side with her.
Excellent analogy, Brian. Mm-hmm. Excellent analogy.
Thank you. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your Medium blog, because this is where I found your stuff. I'm going to go ahead and display it for people. What kind of stuff do you like to blog about, and why?
Well, anything that involves current issues and a new way of seeing it, so that it's gender balanced as opposed to gynocentric. Gynocentric being centered on women. Let's take, for instance, the shootings. I've written about those. Maybe we could let's take maybe the Bill Cosby trial.
Yeah, let's talk about Bill Cosby.
Well, does anyone honestly believe that this guy had to drug 50 women to have sex with them? The guy had money. He was a good-looking man in 20 years ago,
In the 70s.
Money, power, I mean, and people say, well, yeah, all these 50 women are lying, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. That's my view. That's because I've seen cases that I tried to prosecute myself fall apart when the truth came out,
Yeah. So let's get into the details, because this is something that I've seen people on the left and the right. I mean, obviously the left wants to cage every man that's been accused of anything. But people on the right have even said, well, he's, they found him guilty. I guess he was drugging women, because the fact is both sides are pretty gynocentric, and it's hard to try to really get into the meat of it to find out why was he, because at the end of the day, he was accused and found guilty. And we want to look at the details as to how that happened and how that could be that maybe it was, that he was actually an innocent man that was found guilty, or there was some loophole or something. So can you give me a little bit more detail about the Cosby case and how you came to that conclusion?
Sure. And actually, I've talked with reporters who were reporting on the case and was able to get access to transcript excerpts and parts of the actual trial record. What the judge did was he decided he was going to throw this case in favor of the prosecutors. That's common in places like Philadelphia. Philadelphia is possessed with rape hysteria. And Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, they think literally all men are rapists, and any man accused of rape has committed it and needs to be, you know, drawn and quartered and caged and whatnot. And Philadelphia is that way. Their media in Philadelphia makes so much money by inflaming rape hysteria, they're not going to stop. They've been doing it for 25, 30 years, okay? Any sex scandal in Philadelphia is true in the minds of the people who live there and the people who control the media. So that's one thing that Mr. Cosby had against him. Mm-hmm. The second thing was this judge, on the second trial, did things that he didn't do on the first trial that caused the conviction. Okay. Now, there's two things in particular, which is why I am thinking and hoping that the Cosby legal team, Mr. Messereau, will appeal, because I believe the judge committed two very, very serious errors. One, he let in the testimony of the civil case, in which everybody thinks that Bill Cosby said, oh, yeah, I used to drug women so I could have sex with them. Well, Bill Cosby never said that. If you actually read the deposition that he gave 15 years ago, and I did, what the attorney said was, did you give women drugs? And he said, yes. He said, and then you had sex with them. And he said, yes. So, but not at the same time. It was right. Common in those days for people to, you know, have quaaludes. You know, for people who did drugs. I never did drugs. I have a hard enough time with reality. But, it was common.
Essentially, it doesn't imply a lack of consent. It looks like there are women who said, oh, he would say, would you like to come to my trailer and have some drugs and maybe have some sex? And they would say, yes. That was basically what he was admitting. Absolutely. To was that he did drugs with women that wanted to do drugs with him, right?
Well, everybody, a lot of people drink and take drugs and have sex to blow off steam. That's common. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that he made them unconscious or paralyzed them or, drugged them up so that they couldn't respond or refuse or anything like that. It's just they took drugs and they had sex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the judge let that testimony in context, out of context, he was saying, I can let this in because Cosby is not available, okay, to testify.
Yeah.
Well, okay, why wasn't Cosby not available? Well, because Cosby doesn't have to testify. So the judge said, well, I'll get his testimony somewhere else from a sealed court record that I had in a case that I had nothing to do with. We can get this prejudicial, inflammatory evidence in against Bill Cosby and get around his right not to testify. Okay.
Wow.
So that I think was a major error. In fact, one of the jurors went on the radio show after the trial, a couple days after the trial, said, that's why I decided to convict him. You know, was because this slimy evidence from a civil suit 15 years earlier had this one set of questions. Did you give him drugs? Yes. Did you have sex with him? Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's jump ahead to number two. So that in itself, I think, is a good reason why the case turned out the way it did. And that judge knows that evidence was prejudicial in violation of his Fifth Amendment rights and in violation of all kinds of things like the court order sealing it and his right not to have to testify and the fact that he gave the deposition under a promise that there would be no criminal prosecution. Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, if it was true that he gave women quaaludes to knock him out and have sex with them, hey, you know, but that's not what was in that deposition at all. It was simply they did drugs and had sex together.
Okay? So the words quaaludes wasn't used, but drugs, like it was the language of the actual deposition?
If I remember, it was actually quaaludes that, that were common. You know, they're downers. You can knock somebody out with quaaludes and alcohol, but there was no evidence that he ever had sex with anybody who was knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Constand, the accuser in this case, says, "Oh, he gave me three little blue pills, which were Benadryl, which knocked me out and paralyzed me. And when I woke up, he was, you know, having sex with me." Mm-hmm. Well, not likely. Okay. She brought wine to that sexual event. Okay. Mm-hmm. And was drinking her own wine. All right. If he gave her Benadryl, she'd have to have taken probably at her body weight and gender and whatnot, probably 10 or 11 Benadryl to have been immobilized to the point where she could not refuse. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to get into a little speculation here, but I'm going to put that off for a minute. Okay. So, what's the next thing the judge does? He lets five women testify that Cosby gave them little blue pills and they got knocked out and he forced sex on them while they were knocked out. What's the problem with that? Well, the problem is it's not admissible, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say someone is even a convicted rapist, and Cosby wasn't until this trial. If someone is a convicted rapist and raped somebody once, that doesn't mean they did it the second time. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you aren't allowed to get that evidence in. Okay? It's too prejudicial. Yeah. It's too easy for people to say, well, he raped somebody once, he must have done it this time. He's a rapist. Okay? That's called character evidence, loosely. And in this case, the judge called it, I'm going to lose your audience here in a minute, but I'm going to give a technical explanation anyway. The judge called it evidence of a common scheme or plan. Okay. Is it admissible to show that Cosby, as a common scheme or plan, gave women drugs and raped them?
Right.
No. The judge thinks it is. It's not. And that's pretty well settled across the country. If Cosby had done it in the context of this same crime that has been charged, it's admissible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you can't say, well, Cosby did this to five other women 30 years ago, so it's a common scheme or plan for him to give women three little blue pills that knock them out and then have sex with them when they're knocked out. Well, there's a couple of problems with three little blue pills. Both of the pharmaceutical experts at trial, both the prosecution's expert and the defense expert, testified that there's no such pill. Okay. So the jury decided to disregard that, obviously, because they were so prejudiced by the evidence that the judge let in.
Right. I see.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just evidence of a common schema or plan means like if this is something that he has done many times, like the same approach, the same way that, say, Jeffrey Dahmer would go to, you know, places where homosexual men gather. He would pick one up, take him back to his place. He would drug them, you know, put him in his little acid tank and then eat them. That was a common schema because he did it multiple times in the same way. But this is not the same. Am I following that right?
It has to be the same crime. Let's say you've got a burglar who's trying to get into a house that has three locked doors. and he uses the same method to unlock the door each time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a common scheme or plan for the commission of that crime. Okay.
Ah.
Right. Do you see?
Yeah.
But you can't say, well, he's a locksmith and he knows how to pick locks and he'd done it 1,000 times. So that was a common scheme or plan for him to pick the locks to get through the three doors. No. You can't bring in other crimes. Doesn't
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm. So this whole thing smells terrible then. What happened to him is, and not only. So what is that was one other thing about the Cosby trial I wanted to ask. How is it people were able to make accusations that for crimes that happened 30 years ago, about as long as that? Do we not have a, I forget what you call it, but where a certain amount of time has passed and you can't actually, address the crime?
Well, you're referencing the statute of limitations.
Yes.
And there's a drive now across the country to remove statutes of limitations on sexual crimes.
Mm-hmm.
It started with children being molested, and a large part of it is that in some people's book, their belief system, children will not come forward for 20 years until they're adults to report that a sexual crime occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be true in some cases, okay, a few cases. What we're seeing now with all the rape hysteria and all of the child molesting accusations and rape accusations from 20 years is a variety of phenomena. There's a wonderful scientist in Britain, her name is Julie. Gosh, I can't remember her name now, but she's written a book about memory hacking. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can change someone's memory in about, I think she said, maybe half an hour to 40 minutes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
She called in a young man, for instance. She got volunteers, and she called in a young man in college age, and she said, as part of this experiment, I interviewed some of your friends, and one of your best friends from your youth said that you raped her when she was 14 years old. And he said, well, God, I didn't do that. Well, it only took her, I never did. Well, within 30 to 40 minutes, she had him convinced that he had raped his best friend when they were teenagers. Okay. It sounds like a cruel experiment. It may very well be.
Yeah.
But she was able to persuade him. Okay. Police know that you can do that. They get false confessions all the time out of people by convincing them they did something that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's an estimate that as many as 40 to 50% of men who are convicted of sexual crimes are actually innocent. Okay. And that is very much borne out in the exonerations we have based on DNA evidence. About 50% of exonerations on DNA evidence are men who were convicted of rape and it never happened. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
80% of exonerations involve sexual misconduct. Okay. So it's a very emotional charge, and it can be exploited very easily. What's happening with people who are coming up after 20 years and saying, he raped me, he molested me as a child, is something known as false memory syndrome. And of course, feminists will scream that there's no such thing, that it's an evil patriarchal theory to discredit women. And oh no, very valid, documented hundreds, if not thousands of times in laboratory experiments and whatnot. People's memories change within a few days mm-hmm. after an event. Okay. The Supreme Court is now examining the reliability of eyewitness testimony because eyewitnesses don't really remember what actually happened. Okay. Their memories frequently change within a few hours, within a few days. depending on the emotions that they have, their point of view, other things they hear, people's memories are not accurate about events. So you see the media constantly bombarding people with, you know, rapists and sexual molestation and children and satanic pedophilia and whatnot. I mean, people get obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. And it changes their memories. It really does. So they all of a sudden they're remembering that they were molested when in fact it never happened. Freud was the first to document this. Right? We've known this for 150 years. He had thousands of women who were patients of his, and what he found was that their hysteria or psychosomatic symptoms, sometimes that, you know, eye twitches or hand twitches, can be all kinds of things, were tied to them being sexually molested when they were children. Well, after 10 years, he realized after investigating that 9 out of 10 times the children were not molested. These women were not molested as children. You have to read his books and his empirical data to understand that he was very careful in documenting it. It didn't happen. But women remember being molested, and part of that is because, and this is very true, and this is another brilliant woman in Texas. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. She wrote about women's rape fantasies. Women have rape fantasies. At least 60% of women have a rape fantasy once a month. Okay, well, it's not hard for a rape fantasy to hack your memory. Okay, and Julie in Britain has proven that and demonstrated that very well.
Yeah, that's very crazy numbers. That's crazy numbers. And also, one of the clever things that the media does when they're talking about this, you know, especially with the Harvey Weinstein, the Me Too movement and the Hollywood thing, is they do a lot of, they play with definitions. They play with the words and the actual events to try to make everything sound like it's all the same. So, you know, the stuff with Bill Cosby, the stuff with Harvey Weinstein himself, the stuff with Louis C.K., you know, where he essentially just asked women to watch him masturbate and they did. And then they make that, you know, essentially that is the same as a sexual assault or a full on rape. And it makes it's so much information that people are interested in, that they want to consume, that the media can twist it and make it sound like all of it is the same crime, which is the worst type. And they basically always make it out to be full on rape, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
They make hundreds of billions of dollars inflaming people's hysteria over sexual misconduct. Let's face it. Let's take another example. There's Sean Penn produced and narrated a great movie, that you can get it on DVD for $10 or something on Amazon, called Witch Hunt. Just look up Witch Hunt in Amazon DVD. And Sean Penn narrated. It was about the hysteria in the 80s over satanic pedophilia and, you know, child molesting rituals conducted by satanic groups of, you know, adults in California. If you want to realize how easy it is to fool people, watch that video. I think 14 parents spent as much as 20 years in prison for molesting their children in satanic rituals, and none of it ever happened. When the children grew up, they said, none of that happened. We only said it because the police coached us to say it. Prosecutors and the therapists, none of that ever happened. It wasn't real. As adults, they were able to realize that, and all of their parents were exonerated, but not until they spent 15, 20 years in prison. We're talking 14, 15 parents. Okay. That's how easy it is for the media to inflame hysteria and get convictions in cases like the Cosby case, or many, many, many others that we now see men being let out of prison for. Good example was the New York Five. Five men, a rape that never happened. Okay, spent years in prison. Brian Banks, convicted, spent 4.5 years in prison. And it was a complete lie by the girl who accused him. Okay, she eventually admitted that on tape. And that's why we need to be cautious of the hysteria that we see in the media and in our institutions. And believe me, it carries over into the legal system. These judges are hot to convict people. They like the power of convicting men for sexual misconduct. The judges get off on it, and I'm not kidding. So do some of the people, some of the juries. You know. Fortunately, yeah, we have many juries that are sane, and people will approach it with appropriate skepticism. But it didn't happen in the Cosby case.
Yeah, that brings up another thing I wanted to mention about memory. Isn't that kind of like a really low form of evidence? Is essentially someone's memory, because it's very unreliable?
Absolutely. And judges today don't understand that. They're not taught that in law school. They're taught political ideologies in law school instead of the hard science of evidence.
I might have to follow up on that on another show in the future to talk about how the law schools have changed, because if law schools change, then that's really bad news. So speaking of rape convictions and such, and guys, if you're watching, if you have a question for Mr. Davis, just send it through a super chat and I will definitely read it out. So I want to talk about Brock Turner, because this case, it is the one that the feminists and social justice warriors are using it as their flagship reason why rape culture is real. And, you know, I think that it's something that we should definitely talk about. Now, we've talked about it on the show before, but not with a lawyer. So maybe you can give us some additional insight in the Brock Turner case, like why things turn out the way they did and what your thoughts are.
I'm really glad you brought up Brock Turner, because that's a good example. Boy, where do I start with that one? I've actually written a blog article on Brock Turner. I actually read the trial transcript. Okay. Mm-hmm. That case has nothing to do with what the media is trying to tell you it had to do with. Okay. He's a rapist and he only got 6 months in jail. Well, the jury decided not to convict him of rape. Okay. Because a rape did not occur. They convicted him of sexual assault and sexual assault with intent to commit rape. Okay, it wasn't really a rape. Mm-hmm. If I had the time and I thought I could talk and do it, I'd send you a copy of the article I wrote. But I'll do it later, some other time. Anyway, here's what actually happened. Okay, Brock Turner went to a party. He had had 4 or 5 beers and a couple of sips of some Jagermeister. By the way, Jag is Judge Advocate General in the Air Force.
Ah.
Anyway, he had some Jagermeister and about 4 or 5 beers, so he was flying pretty high. But being a fit athlete, you know, you can handle that kind of alcohol. And he went to a party, danced with some women, young women, and there was the accuser there, okay? And she was flying pretty high. She had, I think, 4 or 5 drinks before she even came to the party. And she started drinking at the party. And no one knows how much she had, but she was, you know, in the Air Force, we used to say, 3 sheets to the wind. You know, she was flying pretty high, too. Now, what nobody knows, or very few people understand, is that if a woman is an alcoholic, like this girl was, mm-hmm. it is very common for them to have what's known as a blackout. As soon as they start drinking, within 1 or 2 drinks, okay? they'll start to have a blackout. Now, what is a blackout? Does that mean she's unconscious? No. She's fully functioning. You would never know she was even drunk. And she'll consent and kiss you and talk to you and have fun with you. And the next morning when she wakes up, she'll remember nothing. Okay? That's called an alcoholic-induced blackout. Had nothing to do with unconsciousness. It's just simply amnesia. All right? Well, you'll see in the newspaper, they say, well, she woke up in the emergency room, you know, and she was obviously unconscious while he was raping her. No, she was fully conscious when they decided to make love, and she just didn't start to remember things till she got to the emergency room, where they probably hydrated her, and she came out of the alcoholic-induced blackout. The amnesia. Okay. So she was fully conscious. She was coming on to him. She puts her arm around his waist. They're walking. They fell down a little hill in the grass. And he says, would you like me to take off your bra, or take off your shirt and bra? She said, yes. You know, so they started making out. And would you like me to finger you? Yeah. Okay. And starts fingering. All of a sudden, this guy, these two Swedish guys driving by, one guy comes up and puts him in a hammer lock.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets up, gets away from the Swede, and runs away because the Swede was acting aggressively and violently toward him. Okay.
Right.
The medical technicians got there. She was responding. I mean, she wasn't unconscious. Or knocked out, okay? But then the media, he was charged with rape and all that simply because of the accusation that she was too drunk to consent.
Was she the one that made the accusation, or was it like the state itself or the Swedish guys?
It was the state that made the accusation, okay? The Swedish guys said all we saw was he was on top of her, dry humping her, and she didn't appear to be responding. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they jumped to the conclusion, assault this kid. And of course he ran. I would too. If somebody was trying to beat me up and put me in a hammer lock, I'd move off.
You know? Sure.
But she was conscious and actually a willing participant in what was going on. But during this trial, the boy, it was his word against, you know, the circumstantial evidence, because she didn't remember anything. Okay, that's normal for alcoholics who have been drinking. And she didn't remember anything. By the way, the expert testimony about alcoholic blackouts is in the court record. So interesting if you look at it.
Okay.
Anyway, she didn't remember anything, so he was strictly convicted on circumstantial evidence. And he got up and said, look, this is what happened. Well, he was allowed to get people to come in and say, this guy normally tells the truth, so he's a truthful person. But the judge wouldn't let that evidence in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a error of constitutional magnitude. Under the Sixth Amendment, the U.S. Supreme Court has held that you have a right to get people to come in and say, yeah, he's a truthful person. Okay, you have unconditional right. So, and that judge kept that evidence out. So it was his word against really bad circumstantial evidence and enormous media hysteria about what actually happened. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the Brock Turner case. Read the trial transcripts.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, so Brock Turner only gets 3 months, and he's basically, you know, got one of those things on his leg, and he has to stay at home. And there were people like outside of his door. They were going to lynch him. I mean, they were out there with rifles and stuff because they bought into the narrative that he was a rapist that got off scot-free. Or at least
absolutely
a slap on the wrist.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people believe what's in the media. They don't bother to suspect the media. And we have to start doing that because the media is out of control in the United States and all the way across the West. I mean, they literally are there to not report anything accurately anymore. It's just simply what is going to get us headlines and money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have to stop believing the media.
Absolutely. And speaking of the media, I want to talk about another case. And I'm displaying the Medium articles as we talk about them so that people can see what they look like. And they also have links there. And remember, guys, hit the like button. It helps us with our analytics. It also helps more people see the content. And I think conversations like this are really important. And I want more people to see what we're talking about because no one that I know of is talking about the stuff that we're talking about. So speaking of the media and the way they spin things. Alec Manassian. Okay. So I want to talk about Alec Manassian, what your thoughts are on it in general. He's the guy, for those of you who don't know, that rented a Ryder truck and drove over a bunch of people in Toronto. I think he killed 10, 9 or 10. And the claim is that he did it because he's an incel and that he put out a Facebook post saying, you know, the incel revolution or something like that. I don't actually think that there's evidence that the reason he did it has to do with him being an incel, but rather it's because of a lot of other issues. But I think that's the spin that's happening, and everyone eats it up and they go out. And not only does the media and the news media talk about it, but you have all the comedy shows making skits on it and all the feminist articles and the people on Twitter. And they're all slamming on incels right now, even though it is not, there's no evidence that shows that Alec Manassian's motive had to do with him being incel or that he was inspired necessarily by Elliot Rodger. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that case. And maybe there's something that you know that I don't know about it.
Well, I'd like to offer some insights that you might not know. But let's go on to Alec Manassian. Let's start with incel. What is incel? And I actually wrote an article about this. Incel is involuntarily celibate. Now, what the feminists immediately got into the media as a headline was, incels are men who feel that they're entitled to have sex with women and whenever they want. And if they can't, then they're going to kill them. Okay, that's what feminists tried to get in headlines in the media, and they succeeded. Okay. What is incel? Well, incel is involuntarily celibate. And there are a lot of young men. It's not really a movement, it's just a group of people who commiserate.
Mostly men.
Why? Okay. Well, why can't a man have interpersonal intimate relations with women? Well, if he looks like the Elephant Man, okay, we can understand that. But a guy who's average looking, let's look at Elliot Rodger. The guy was a fairly decent looking kid, you know. Why can't men have satisfying interpersonal relationships with women? Well, I don't have the numbers. I don't have scientific studies to back me up on this, but I know that when a boy has been sexually molested or raped by a woman in a traumatic way, that's what happens. What happens when boys are molested or raped by a woman, and it's similar to what happens to girls, almost identical in terms of the seriousness of the effect, is it will freeze the boy's psychosexual development neurologically. It's a physical thing, not just emotional. It's not something he can just get over. It freezes his physical neurological development at the age at which he was raped or molested. So let's say a boy is raped at the age of 10 or 11 by a teacher, which is more common than you would ever believe. Okay?
Yeah.
That boy must go through the rest of his life with the emotional skills of a 10 or 11 year old boy. Okay, not possible to have an adult relationship with intimacy when you have only the skills of a 10 or 11 year old or a 7 year old or a 5 year old. Okay.
Yeah.
So what happens is they have no idea how to initiate a relationship. These boys are often very, very shy, and they cover it up by acting like they're not shy. They're very shy, very uncertain of themselves. I mean, to an extreme where it's not possible for them to interact with sexual feelings with a woman on a normal level. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's behind, what I see is behind most of the incel people. They all exhibit symptoms of severe sexual trauma. And we know statistically that about 95% of the sexual trauma that boys suffer are from women, older women, and girls. Okay?
Yeah.
But our society pays attention only to girls who are victims of sexual trauma.
Of course.
And that's part. Okay? So that's what I think is behind incel. It's not that they're ugly or losers. They just don't know how to have mature, intimate relationships. And so you'll get the feminists come along, well, they need to get over it. Mm-hmm. No. Uh-uh. No. When your brain, something like being raped by your female teacher is so traumatic to a child that the brain literally will stop developing that part of your brain. It freezes right there. Okay, where you were when that trauma occurred. That's one of the reasons we don't allow children to have sex. Okay?
Yep.
So, that's what I see as behind incel. Now, him running over people probably had nothing to do with his views on sex or sexuality or relationships with women. It sounds to me like he was clinically severely depressed. Most men will commit suicide when they get that clinically depressed. Some, and we'll get into this a little bit with the Parkland shooting if we get that far.
Mm-hmm.
Some, when their medication is adjusted, that's a very, very critical period in someone who is clinically depressed's life. Okay. You can trigger these violent episodes by removing them from a medication too abruptly or changing the medication or giving them two that have unpredictable consequences. And we see that as a common thread in all of these shootings and violent episodes. The person was severely, chronically depressed, low social skills, as often happens when children who have been molested grow up. So they're socially isolated, and they're clinically depressed, and they're on medication. Okay? We see those as common threads in all of these. Yet our response is to, you know, to take away the Second Amendment and put more boys in prison. No, that's not the solution. You know, we need to look at this with a compassionate lens, as well as all the others.
Absolutely. So. Did you mention the fatherlessness too? Because that's I've noticed that a big pattern with these is that there is either no fathers present or involved in their life, or they're just not really connected with their father. Like Elliot Rodger, you know, he actually lived with his father, but his father was a very, very busy Hollywood producer, and so he was never around. And so Elliot Rodger was essentially raised by his stepmother, who was really abusive to him. Just terrible to him. And, you know, this doesn't excuse anything he did. But I think that the biological father present in the home and they're, you know, when they're vanishing endangered species now, I think that is a big part of it, too. I don't know if that's what Alec Manassian's situation was, but the Parkland shooter is another one who didn't have his biological parents around.
Absolutely. And feminists will scream bloody murder when you say this, but 26 out of 27 of the most serious school shooters came from single mother households. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of things going on there. All right. First of all, the father isn't there to guide the child. Okay. Going through adolescence is extremely emotional and can be extremely traumatic if you don't have someone who's been down that road and can show you how to deal with the feeling. Okay. Being overwhelmed with sexual feelings and not have anyone to be able to talk to about it. Okay. And say, hey, well, you know, it's okay, but you're going to have to learn to get some control over that feeling because it's not polite to express it, but you can under certain circumstances. And here's those circumstances. A boy needs to hear that from a father, not from mother who's going to say, well, you're dirty and a pervert. Because, you know, you should learn to respect women, not see them as sexual. You know, that's the last thing an adolescent boy needs to hear. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you have the lack of guidance from the father. The second thing is you don't have the father there to protect the boy. Or girls, for that matter.
Absolutely.
We have similar problems with girls that come from single mother households. Single mothers can be and are terrifically abusive. 80% of the child murders in this country are perpetrated by mothers. Okay. Vast majority of the child abuse, something close to that, again, 80% perpetrated by mothers on children because there's no father there to protect the children. Okay.
Yeah.
We hear about all these excuses for women who murder their newborn children. Well, the fathers used to be there to protect those children from being murdered. They aren't anymore. And, you know, you hear all kinds of excuses like postnatal depression in women and postnatal. Now they've invented a new one, which has no basis. Postnatal psychosis. Well, literally hundreds of millions or billions of women have gone through postnatal depression, postnatal psychosis, and they don't murder children. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's not an excuse. All right. Yeah. But again, the father isn't there to protect the child from the mother's abuse. That's an outrageous statement in our culture. Well, mothers don't abuse their children. It's always the fathers. They're the ones who get angry and violent, you know. Well, let's see. Women initiate domestic violence 70% of the time, kill 80% of the children, abuse 80% of the abuse is done by mothers, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We need to change our views about who the real problems are in our culture, and it's not necessarily the fathers. Certainly there are abusive fathers and husbands, but actually the numbers point more to mothers and wives as being the abuse problem in our culture. Not the other way around.
Absolutely. And let's also, I know that you wanted to say something about Elliot Rodger that I found really interesting, is that you have this image, and I'm going to share it on the screen now. It says, feminists taught Elliot Rodger everything he needed to know. So would you expand on that? Because I think you're right. I mean, you know, they tried to pin the Elliot Rodger thing on the men's rights movement because he was an incel and then he was in the PUA hate. And, you know, they always, that aside, they're always doing that shit. But I think that it was his gynocentric, women first, feminist thinking that actually created the situation. But I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think that's likely, Brian. And that's why I devised that little meme that hopefully people can see in the audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, the panic in the media about Elliot Rodger having difficult things to say about women, which were probably very true with regard to his stepmother. We know she was abusive. Okay. And connecting that with a mass shooting in which women were killed totally overlooks the violence from the feminist in our culture. Let's look at, I have a quote there. Quote, to call a man an animal is to flatter him. He's a machine, a walking dildo. Can you imagine saying something similar like that to that about women? That was by Valerie Salinas, one of the founders of SCUM, or the Society for Cutting Up Men.
Yeah, she's also the woman that tried to kill Andy Warhol, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely.
She was the one, yeah. Also going to be portrayed by Lena Dunham in the on like some TV show. I'm not kidding. This is true. This is actually going to happen.
I can't think of anybody better than Lena Dunham to portray a repulsive personality like Valerie Solanas.
Yeah.
So, I better not get started on Lena Dunham. You know, she's the one, and this is an example of rapister. It's now a badge of honor to claim you're a rape victim, which she did. And of course, the rape never occurred. Someone actually investigated it and found out she had never been. She just fantasized about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. For some reason, women who make false accusations fantasize and then act out and report that they've been raped by conservative men. There was a woman in University of Wyoming, and she sent herself something like 25 text messages from a guy who, well, I'm gonna make that liberal bitch shut up, but you know, and she was inventing these fantasies about some conservative guy out there who wanted to rape her. Fortunately, the police caught her, but not after they shut down the whole campus to look for this person who was, you know, she had made up and fantasized about, you know. So you know, this is a problem with the media hysterically promoting any accuser as a heroic victim, not appropriate to reality.
Okay. No,
the research I've done, we're approaching 90% of rape accusations being false in our culture, and wow, those are the ones that are reported to law enforcement. There are probably more unreported males who have been raped by women than the other way around.
You know, wow.
Of course, males never report it. Mm-hmm. How do we know that? Well, we know that from numerous studies done with self-assessment surveys. Mm-hmm. But you never hear about the men. For instance, there was Dr. Miriam S. Denoff, when she was a contemporary of Janice Fiamengo at University of Ottawa. She wrote a book in 2005, which I read while I was prosecuting some sexual assault cases. And her title of her book is Perspectives on Female Sex Offending, A Culture of Denial. We simply deny that women commit sexual crimes, and the data shows that they commit as much or more sexual crimes and misconduct than men.
Hmm. Okay.
Men are held accountable from the moment they're born for sexual misconduct. Women are not. They're pretty much immune from even criticism. You know, you'll find people sticking up for Deborah LaFave, who raped the boy. And I can't remember her name, but it was the woman who got pregnant by a young boy when he was 14 years old, and she married him. I can't remember the name right now off the top of my head, but you know, feminists defend that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
The feminists play the vagina dialogues as an episode in it where a lesbian molests a young girl. Forgot how old she was in the play. 13 12? Years old. And she said, yeah, this is child molesting, but it's the good kind of child molesting.
Yeah, I think the line is, this was a rape, but it was a good rape, I believe, is the line from it.
There you go. Okay. And that is the attitude of much of our culture, not just feminists, toward women who commit sexual crime. And they're doing an enormous amount of damage, especially to boys. All these teachers and are raping boys. And it's portrayed in the media as, well, she had a sex romp.
Yeah.
With a 12-year-old boy. Give me a break. That boy, when he grows up and he won't even realize what's wrong. He'll just realize he's different. He'll be socially isolated because he's stuck with 11 and 12-year-old psychosexual skills. So he'll be socially isolated by the time he's in his mid-20s. By the time he's 30, he'll have severe clinical depression, crushing anxiety attacks, and he's a likely candidate for suicide. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that a lot of what the feminists are trying to label now restrictive, I learned that from you, restrictive masculinity or toxic masculinity arises because these boys, these men are victims as boys of women's sexual misconduct. You know, it's at least as common as men's sexual misconduct toward children, at least.
Absolutely.
Possibly more.
Oh yeah, that's really good stuff. So we're getting close to the end of the show, but so I want to ask you one more thing. But first, I want to burn through these super chats that I got. Some of them are from a while back. So Zeranx gives us $5. Thank you so much, sir. And he says, regarding the Cosby case, are you familiar with the Quaaludes issue, which we already talked about? And he did thank us for that. Mental accretion. Gives us $5 and says, memory isn't recall, it's reconstruction. People make up stories to tell themselves what they think they know about events. I think that's right. Red Moon.
Absolutely. Can I interrupt you for a second?
No,
here?
Go ahead.
For the benefit of our listeners. Absolutely. Memory is not reliable, and our emotions, our feelings the day after affect our memories of especially something significant like a sexual event. If you want to see this portrayed very vividly, there's a brilliant film producer from Japan in the 50s. He did The Seven Samurai, which...
Oh, Akira Kurosawa.
Akira Kurosawa. Mm-hmm. He did a movie called Rashomon.
Mm-hmm.
R-A-S-H-O-M-O-N. Many directors will say it's the finest film ever done. Okay, and he's an extremely brilliant director. It's called Rashomon. Watch that film. It's about a rape and murder that occurs. And then the people come into a court in Japan and testify to what happened. And their stories aren't even close to matching each other. Okay, the woman, particularly watch how she portrays the rape and the murder. Okay, mm-hmm. Nothing like what actually happened. You're shown what actually happens, and then four or five different people then testify to what they think they saw. A good illustration of how unreliable memory is. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. Rashomon is a great movie, but just put aside 3 hours because it's long. So Red Moon Blade gives us $5 and says, if race mixing creates a single race, would people be upset that they don't have an accidental birth color to be proud of? I don't know the answer to that question. Natufi and Grain Harvest gives us $10 and says, any advice for single dating guys how to protect ourselves against false accusations? I would say until you like build a trust, if you want to really be careful, just make sure that you guys only spend time together in public around other people so that you can't be falsely accused. But
yeah, can
ahead.
I amend?
Mm-hmm.
I interrupt you. I'm talking over you, Brian.
It's okay.
I wrote a book about that.
Oh, yeah.
How to avoid false accusations of rape.
Yep, I got it right here.
Self-defense in a feminist state. Okay? And it tells you in there. It tells you, look, these are the women who make false accusations have characteristics. Borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder. And I'll give you examples and show you how you can detect that. Stay away from those women. Okay? If a woman says she's been raped, stay away from her. Okay? You don't want to go near that woman sexually unless you have a professional counselor helping you over a long period of time. You know, it's a no-win if a woman says I've been raped. If she has been, you've got to work that through with a counselor because she'll have flashbacks during sex with you to being raped. Okay, and you're likely to get accused. If she hasn't been, you right there got a liar you're going to have to live with if she decides to accuse you. Stay away from them. Stay away from women who don't respect men. Well, you know, you're a dirty guy, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Stay away from them. Because that's how they're going to treat you. Okay, but anyway, read my book. It's a very popular book.
Yep. I put it up there. It's got it's 4 out of 5 stars on Amazon. I don't know who would give it low ratings, but I'm sure it's a feminist. Okay, so Tyler Preston says for $5, thank you, Tyler, if feminists want to believe that they actually do want to help men, then you would be talking about the lack of fathers among the black community. Absolutely. The black community, and I've said this many times on the show, they're the canary in the coal mine. If you want to see where everywhere else is headed in the United States with the fatherlessness, look at the black community. And that's where everywhere is going. That's why it needs to be addressed. It is, it should be of the highest priority. And Black Lives Matter hates talking about it. They hate talking about it. It sends their hackles up. Did you want to add to that at all?
Yeah. Black single mothers are notoriously violent. You can bet that black men are not present in their families, not because they don't want to be, but because they're very often pushed out of the family by violence and by the fact that the women get a big payoff if they don't have a husband around in terms of government benefits. Okay. So they say, well, what the hell do I need a guy around for? You know, and they will become extremely violent toward black men. Black men are not inherently or genetically violent. They're awful, very decent guys, and they're pushed out of their families and their role as fathers by a violent single mother.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, Rambam 3000 gives us £2 and says, tell John Davis he's woke. You are woke, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the best compliment I've had all week.
Okay, so we're going to talk about one more thing, and because we only got a couple minutes, and then I got to do a short after show. I want to ask you about the Parkland shooter, because that was the original post that got me interested in talking to you in the first place. So I wanted to defend the Parkland shooter, or at least try to understand where he was coming from. And there have been some new developments regarding the Parkland shooter. Cruz, I don't remember his first name. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the Parkland shooter and the bullying that could have been a part of the problem.
Okay, again, let's start with a socially inept boy. Why is he socially inept? Well, first of all, he's going through adolescence, overwhelmed with emotions and hormones and a lot of experiences. He's from a single mother home, if I remember correctly. He's on psychiatric medications because of his behavior. Probably not psychiatric treatment or counseling that is addressing the real problems. Mm-hmm. He exhibits all of the symptoms of a boy who was molested or raped by a woman when he was young. Okay. He's in a man-hating environment. Any of our schools now are so misandrist, they are saturated with hatred of men and masculinity because it doesn't fit the Marxist agenda. Okay. Boys are relentlessly shamed in our public school system, as are men and masculinity. The boy was alienated from his father, and the boy gives all of the symptoms of someone who's being abused by a mother. Okay. I'm going to leave that there because that's a whole book in itself. If you really want to read a good book, read Dr. Michelle Elliott's book, Female Sexual Abuse of Children. She's the world expert on the subject.
Okay.
And it includes a lot of, but anyway, it's a whole book. So all of these things are present there. The boy was drugged with psychiatric drugs, but importantly, they had just changed this medication. Remember, I said that's a critical event. Okay, that can cause all kinds of unpredictable results. And that's what it looks like happened to me, happened to this boy. If you listen to his attorney, a young woman, she said the next morning he couldn't believe that he had done it and was terribly sad that he did it and that it happened. Okay. And chances are it was the change in medication that caused unpredictable neurological consequences that precipitated the violence. Okay. So we see this as these seven things as common factors in all of these school shootings. Why white boys? Well, because white boys have access to psychiatric care and psychiatric medication in upscale white communities. Okay. minority children frequently do not. That's one of the reasons. Okay, but then you have all of these other factors: misandry, shaming men and boys for their sexuality, and hating men and boys, alienation from their father,
anti-white racism, yeah,
and racism, sure.
Yeah.
And there can be, and there's so much racism in our country now. That's part of the Marxist agenda, is to divide everybody on demographics so that it's easier to control them. Okay, so you have anti-white as well as anti-black or anti-Hispanic or anti-Asian factors. And the media is flaming all of these, you know, inflaming, pouring gasoline on all of these minor demographic differences between us, because it's easy to divide us that way.
Yeah,
we need to stop it.
Okay? Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the Emma, you okay, real quick before we close it out, Emma Gonzalez, who was the anti-gun advocate, teenage girl turned hero by the media, that said, her famous line was, those talking about how we should have not ostracized him, you didn't know this kid, okay? We did. Is an admission that she was a part of the problem? Is my suspicion?
I certainly think so. Let's look at it. We didn't like this kid. He was a man. He exhibited these characteristics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's what misandry is. It's an excuse to hate and ostracize. Okay. All of this shaming of men and boys is not helping women or gender equality or anything else. It's just providing excuses for hatred, ostracizing and hurting boys and men. And we as a culture are paying a price for that hatred, mm-hmm. and allowing that hatred on the part of people like Emma Gonzalez and the feminists who she obviously supports by her conduct and her rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Well, you know, I just got one last question from a super chat that I failed to answer, but this was something I was going to bring up at the end anyway. So Fillerator gives us $5 Canadian. That's like, I think, $2.50 or something American. And he says, I'm just kidding. He says, Doge, could you ask Mr. Davis to give links for his stats, or are they in his blog? It would be very useful. Thank you. So I guess you have sources in your blog. He wants to know stuff he can look at.
I do. You know, if you really want, and I'm not just trying to pitch my books, but I documented the sources in the books. When I'm writing the blog, I don't always have the time to do that. Usually I've got a meme, like it kind of depends on the subject, like false rape accusations at 60 to 90%. That's easy. There's a meme in my blog that has a graph that has the citation to the scientific studies underneath it. You kind of have to look for it. I promise you any statistics that I quoted are supported. And they are, especially in my books, they're in the footnotes. Okay, that's the best I can do for you right now. Most of my blog articles have at least one other article referenced or some form of reference, but it's not anywhere near thorough what's in my books. Okay.
Yep, I'm displaying it now. It's basically the top, the most recent blog. Is the one, the most recent blog you wrote is the one that says 90% of rape accusations are false, with references another blog that I think that has the FBI or the statistics in it. So you can go there and look at that. And I have it on the screen so you guys can see it. So, and here are the books. There's lots of them. He's written a few here, so you might as well check those out. Women of the Klan. Rape, John Davis, Rape Hysteria, Women Who Rape Men, False Accusations of Rape, Lynching in the 21st Century, Female Sex Predators, A Crime Epidemic, and How to Avoid False Accusations of Rape. So at least for starters, there's a few more too. So Yeah, I want to thank you guys for joining us. Oh, Philerator gave us another $5 Canadian. Thanks, Phil. That makes it a total of $5 when you add the other five, the other $2.50. So I'm just playing. I'm just having fun. All right. So I want to thank you guys for joining us on the show. I especially want to thank John Davis for taking the time to come on. I thought this was a really great conversation. And yes, you are definitely quite woke. I will say on behalf of everyone here watching, we're going to go into a short little after show to talk a little bit about Me Too, if you're willing to come along and join us. You might want to become a patron at www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. And yes, that was a good time was had by all. I'm dare I speak for Mr. Davis here.
You bet.
All right, great. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys very soon. We'll see you on the next Fireside Chat.